This meeting is now being recorded.
Great. So it's the Jason Task Force, Monday, November 20th. Is that the day?
Yes.
It is all day.
And that's Michael Morris. And so, Michael, we were going to hear some perspectives. And do you have an order, or what did you want to do?
Yeah, I'll put the meeting members on: Mei Hung, Steve Morgenau, Gary Brown from Oracle, Phil Nichols from Oracle, and Michael Morris and Michael Sessa are on the call. And just the introduction, just saying we were looking at our approach previously had been that we were trying to tailor both the design rules for XML and JSON so that it would be a smooth translation, and a lot of the problems people have had in creating JSON that the JSON community was happy with, especially in the API areas and things like that, were easy to translate to. So things like problems like attributes that were optional and what effect that could have on the nature of JSON if you were translating from XML. So what happened was that last week Alex had been to some meetings, Alex Jackal, and he outright said, this is, you know, we really should look at JSON-LD more heavily and think about how we can match up between that and XML. And obviously some things are, it does make a lot easier, like namespaces in XML translate fairly straightforwardly to JSON by using JSON-LD. But the object relationships are a little more confusing and how those would be used. And then we discovered that one of our standards, which is our ePortfolio standard, uses a lot of linking to identify objects. It uses a proprietary method with URLs, but it was doing a lot of linking between the objects in the document. So instead of using IDs and ID refs. So came to the conclusion that, yeah, this is more important than ever because we do have some of our standards that are really dependent on that kind of thing. So given that, Carrie and Phil, I'll open it up to you guys to talk about your experiences with JSON and XML and the relationship between the two, and perhaps give us some insight in where we can go from here.
Sure. You know, I'm going to mostly defer to Phil. He's certainly much more technical than I am in that regard, much more experienced than I am. But, you know, overall, we've actually been kind of working through some of these same issues and problems, sort of the thinking about XML versus JSON and translation issues, transformation issues, the different structures, the you know, some of the complexities that arise because of those different structures. Now, I don't know it very much, kind of like you, I don't know very much about JSON-LD myself. One thing I can tell you is that within Oracle, we currently have extremely limited support for JSON-LD within our tech stack across the board, not just within our higher education applications or anything. So, and certainly on the campus solution side, on the PeopleSoft side, we have zero support for it. So JSON-LD is it's one of the reasons I wanted to start being a part of the conversation, just so I can understand where we're going, how rocky the road ahead may be for us as we start to move in that direction. But Phil, I know, you know, yeah, go ahead.
Carrie, it's Michael. I was just going to ask, you said your JSON-LD is very restricted. Is there a main reason behind that? Is it just that it's new?
Yeah, nobody has explicitly articulated that to me. The feeling I've gotten is that largely it's new, and we traditionally, certainly on the PeopleSoft side, even more so than on the more traditional Oracle side, we have a very, very slow uptake of new technologies. It becomes a matter of how well is it supported in the underlying tool stack, and that generally, you know, we are generally not, fair to say, we're not a bleeding edge adopter. On the Oracle tech side, the feeling I've gotten is that there's an element of that. It's just adoption and support for that in the tech stack, but also kind of very pursuant to this conversation, a certain skepticism and or just inquisition about how to handle JSON-LD, whether, you know, what does it provide that's going to be of value? What's the value of the investment of the adoption of support for it? So I think Oracle is big, which means we're not very nimble. And so decisions like that are undertaken after a great deal of consideration. So I think we're just kind of in that consideration phase. And Phil, Phil's been doing a lot of thinking about many of these topics recently due to some of his assignments. So I don't know if you want to, you know, kind of talk about your experience both in terms of JSON overall and XML, kind of, you know, being able to crosswalk between them, as well as the experience you had. So Phil, briefly, and pardon me for speaking for you, Phil, I actually lured Phil over to Oracle, lured him to the dark side from IMS. Phil had an integrations company that he owned, and they contracted with IMS, among others. And so, for example, Phil was responsible for building out the conformance test beds for IMS and working with IMS on a lot of their integration issues. And a lot of these same issues were and are relevant from that side as well. So, Phil, take her away.
All right. So, yeah, there's a lot we could talk about. So I guess where I'll start is just talking about XML. And obviously XML has been around for a very, very long time. It's, I would argue, very well supported in the marketplace. There are lots of good development libraries out there for developers to use to make, you know, full use of XML. You've got things like XML Beans. You've got JaxB if you're a Java developer. And I think XML, you know, has got XML schemas that were pretty much in there in the form of originally DTDs from pretty much day one with it. And I think a lot of thought went into sort of strong typing of data and, you know, that sort of thing. JSON, on the other hand, is relatively new, and I think the primary use case for JSON has been as mobile platforms have exploded. And, you know, the thing with XML is it's fairly widely recognized that using a lot of the libraries from XML is quite sort of memory intensive. And, you know, when you're writing software to run on a phone that hasn't got a massive amount of memory, I think the industry recognized we needed something a lot more lighter weight to be able to handle that. Hence, JSON comes in. And then I think because JSON comes in, and I might be doing a lot of people a bit of a disservice here, I think a flavor of the monthism kind of develops around it, and then suddenly everything needs to be done in JSON. So my kind of position on JSON at the moment is, if you're building mobile apps and you're passing, you know, a shopping basket backwards and forward, then it is absolutely perfect for that job. If you are perhaps working on passing complex objects around that primarily are going to be moved between servers and other servers, then I start to question why JSON is the perfect choice for that. Servers have tons of memory. They usually have tons of bandwidth to each other. So having an XML overhead, I don't think is any big deal, particularly when I think the tooling for XML is a lot better than it is for JSON. And I think I can evidence that by sort of looking at some of the newer specs that have come out around JSON that ultimately I think are trying to make it a little bit more like XML. I'm thinking here of JSON schemas. I'm thinking a little bit of JSON linked data as well. So that's kind of my background, and I wouldn't say I was skeptical about JSON. I just think you have to use the right tool for the job that you're trying to do. And I think generally organizations need to think about, you know, what is it that we're trying to achieve, and then choose the tool that's right for them. But, you know, that being said, there is a huge push for everybody to be adopting JSON at the moment. I think that has to feature into thinking. So that's quite a general intro there. In terms of LD, I've seen it used in a number of IMS specs in particular. It was at one point in LTI, but I understand they're removing it. And a number of reasons for that include I don't think they knew what it was really giving them, given what LTI was doing and what its kind of, you know, what its mission was. And then I also heard anecdotally that because of the lack of tool support for LD, that developers were finding it difficult to resolve those sort of those contexts and those types and get them back and make sense of them in a useful way. I think a lot of that code had to be written manually, and there was a lot of variance between different companies as to who'd got that right and whatnot. To answer the question of translating between the two, it should be relatively straightforward. Certainly to translate from XML to JSON, I know Oracle, we've got some technology that does that, that our customers can use. You can do it in both ways. We use a variant on XML schemas that we've extended slightly to be able to do that. So you certainly can translate between standard JSON and XML. And then I think it's possible to then go one step further and include some of perhaps, you know, a high level context in a location attribute or something like that inside a message, if you then wanted to start to bring the heavy typing in. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure what, you know, are there specific questions that you've got, or, you know, it's difficult just to sort of talk when I don't really know a huge amount of the background to this.
Yeah. This is Mike Sessa. I'll jump in first and say thank you for your wise words. Basically, Michael Morris, as PESC's chair of the technical advisory board, has been looking at this for 2 years. And so it's been, you know, we are small, so we can be nimble, but when PESC puts out something, you know, like anything, if it needs to be a standard, it needs to be implemented. And so we don't want to go down a rabbit hole and produce a product that nobody implements.
Sure.
So your words were very wise and very applicable, knowing that you kind of don't know where we're at. I say we're a ship on the ocean, and we're trying to figure out what ports do we need to hit. You know, do we need to hit the JSON port, and on what schedule? Do we need to hit the JSON LD port, and what's that schedule? So, you know, one of the other strategic questions we have is, one of the benefits of JSON has been, in contrast to XML, which folks believe XML is verbose, and JSON is light and, you know, web services friendly, but when you then make the JSON as robust as the XML, haven't you just then simply created a new XML that's verbose?
Yes.
So are we stuck with a problem here, and not a negative problem, but, you know, the development folks want JSON, and we have to understand the restrictions and the consequences that brings so that we can educate everybody around it and not sell it as something that it's not. So
yeah,
I'll stop there, Michael.
So I'd probably come back fairly quickly on that and say, so, you know, what is it are you looking for people to implement? And in my experience with standards organizations, it comes down to one of two things. There's either some file that is going to represent something that industry is going to agree on. This is the representation for whatever. And then they will pass those files around somehow. And then there's also a notion that we'll have a service and we'll define an API, so a service for something, and we want people to independently implement that particular API, and that's what they're going to use. Now, I think if you've got standards that are mostly a file format and they're in XML, I would really suggest that you question why you would want to take that and turn it into a JSON file You know, it's showing exactly the same things in exactly the same way, but all you're doing is changing it from XML to JSON. So, you know, all of those, you know, all the brackets are becoming curly braces, and, you know, you're taking out some commas and putting in some colons. But ultimately, you've still got a file that somebody's going to be getting. I think if you have services, then I think you've got a very, you need to have a fairly strong argument, given the way the industry is, to say why you wouldn't be looking at something that was RESTfully based using JSON for the payloads. And I distinguish there JSON rather than JSON-LD. Could you speak to that? I mean, I don't know what the PESC portfolio really is in any great detail. So is it a bit of both, or are there things you're looking at at the moment? Or?
Right now, what we supply is basically file-formatted material. So while we do have some standards that are web-based services to transport that information around, most of the things that we standardize are things like transcripts, so college and high school transcripts, test score reports from companies like ACT or College Board. There are other standards for ePortfolio, our portfolio standard for how people can gather all their credentials into a single file and transport those around. So it is basically the first of those. And we've been very successful, and people have been using our standards for passing transcripts between high schools and colleges and between colleges. So there's that is what we do.
Okay.
In terms of services, yeah, we understand that if and one of the things that one of our partners were working with A4L, which is really in the secondary and earlier grades, they provide standards, and they do use a lot more services because they're more of an operational system than PESC. So they're our partner, and we're working with them. And unfortunately, John's not on the call today, but we've been working with them on this, coming up with a common solution for the two of us. So there's that drives the services part of it, and then, you know, if we're going to work together, that sort of drives us toward the JSON solutions. Now, it doesn't mean I don't think we've ever considered giving up the XML standards and replacing them with JSON standards. We do have a marketplace out there that sometimes requests the data in JSON. And, in fact, we have some implementations where people are doing, some companies that are PESC members that are actually doing translation right now, using JAXP and things like that to translate between XML and JSON. So there is, and that's what ultimately is going to drive this, right? The marketplace, not the technological arguments. So that's where we're thinking, and there are people that have requested the transcripts in JSON, and they want it, their programmers want it that way, because there's a lot of people trained that know how to deal with that and find DOM and a lot of the technologies in XML cumbersome in their programming languages. So, and everybody coming out of college now knows JavaScript, knows JSON, and all the web APIs that I've been looking at are RESTful services. They provide mainly JSON. The number of sites that are providing XML are declining very quickly.
Yeah. I think, I mean, we're seeing fewer and fewer SOAP-based services being sort of exposed externally. I still think there is some space for it completely internally on your server stack if you're writing components that talk to each other, but they're not going out over the net. But, you know, that's a by-the-by. But I'm not seeing much evidence of JSON LD-based services. I don't know if you're seeing anything differently there.
I haven't seen it. Alex is not on the call today, and he claimed last time that this is the trend where things were going, but in terms of the current market, I haven't seen it. So we'll have to see where Alex is not here to defend himself and to support his viewpoint. So I don't want to – I mean, he may have good evidence to that point. I don't think we quizzed him last week on it very heavily.
I mean,
just
I think
Michael, let me just jump in for a second and say Alex and I both have heard a lot about Jason LD. So I've heard it on the international market, but I've only heard the hype. So what I've been trying to do is reach out to everybody. I've literally put out a call for anybody to talk to me about implementing Jason LD. And I really, when Carrie said that you guys had very restricted, you know, use of it, that's why I invited you guys. I can't find anybody else to talk about Jason LD. So that right there tells me something. And the other thing I just wanted to mention to circle back on what Michael mentioned was Access for Learning, or A4L. They work in the PK-12 market. What we found out when we reached to that, when we reached out to them, they too were in the same boat. They wanted to do something with Jason, or so they thought, or, you know, so we think, but they didn't know exactly what to do. So we are trying to maybe present a coordinated approach to the PK-12 and the higher education market, because we could be coordinated maybe for the first time in presenting either a strategy or a timeline or common principles about, as standards bodies, what do we think about Jason, and when do we think it's going to happen, and what are we doing about it? So, you know, we're trying to bring in anybody. We've talked to folks in NEEM, which is the National Information Education Model, and it's mostly Department of Justice and DHS folks. And what we heard is they're also very Jason LD happy, yet the quote I got is, everybody loves it, no one is buying it. So that's what I heard from them. So, you know, we're just trying to figure out where the market is. I guess the best question is, where is the market and how should standards bodies, you know, react to that? I've heard a lot of hype. Is it the same hype as blockchain? Is it on the blockchain hype chain, you know, hype curve? That's, we need to know that.
Okay. So in terms of people you could speak to, have you come across a chap called Stephen Vickers?
I'm not
What's
familiar
with his name?
Stephen Vickers, V-I-C-K-E-R-S.
Vickers.
All right, I mean, okay, so if you haven't, I could introduce you to Stephen. He's a consultant working out of the UK, and was until about 3 weeks ago, the sort of lead implementer for IMS on LTI2. And he looked in agonizing detail at Jason LD, wrote various documents that used it and whatnot, and he's probably a lot closer to where the market is from a wider perspective than just ourselves at Oracle. I'd be very happy to introduce you to Stephen. He'd be a really good guy for you to speak to.
That would be awesome. Sure.
In terms of a standards organization, so if it was me in your position, I think what I would do is look at Jasonifying, if you like, what was appropriate, but just look to turn it into Jason and then have a view to be writing the context objects perhaps, you know, somewhere further out in the future. Because, you know, if you look at the JSON LD spec, you can basically have JSON LD in standard JSON, and nobody would really be any the wiser because you're not embedding the structures with those sort of context tags and things like that. But you can be writing those in the future so that you can then sort of move people fairly seamlessly over by including the context tags in location headers and things like that. If you find that the market really goes for Jason LD, then at that point it should be relatively trivial to go, all right, we'll do sort of, you know, a full Jason LD, we'll embed ID tags, we'll embed context and types and all of that inside our bodies. But if the market doesn't go that way, you've still got something you can actually use. Did you see what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. No, that's yeah. So it's a phased approach and just
yeah.
watch where the market goes. Yeah, that's a good because that's the road we're going down is how can we supply JSON to our customers that want JSON. And questions like, do we start writing JSON schema? I mean, you look at all the Swagger OpenAPI documents, and they're providing the schema in there for the payload. Now, the payloads are all pretty small. It's for each of the endpoints. So that's our standards tend to be much bigger than the normal payload for a API call, obviously. We're mm-hmm. moving full transcripts, which have huge amounts of information in them. But that's exactly right. So if we can provide JSON to those people and then watch where the market goes, instead of trying right now to do a translation into something that's very complicated, I think that's good advice.
Yeah. I'm still to be convinced that the tool support is there for LD. I think it's kind of there for JSON, certainly for, I don't want to say simple JSON meaning small JSON, but I've seen libraries in a bunch of languages that will do that translation really quickly, and I think, you know, there's a lot of evidence for uptake of JSON just generically, so I don't think there's any massive risk in looking at how you would convert XML structures to JSON structures.
Right.
But I think I would personally, I wouldn't want to commit, you know, I wouldn't go to Kerry and say, Kerry, we need to be implementing JSON LD today. It's the most important thing ever. I think, yeah, have an eye on it. But from an Oracle perspective, until we were to see, you know, some you know, serious companies or some serious standards organizations really going all in on it, you know, and
yeah,
what I've heard from IMS is, you know, they're pulling out of it for LTI, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking as somebody who in the past has made the mistake of getting too far ahead of the curve, that it becomes very painful. It becomes wasted investment. Been there, done
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and that's the point, is JSON, it's all JSON syntax, so it's just a matter of adding semantics to certain keywords
yeah.
and then having tools that interpret those keywords and take the appropriate action. And
that's right.
So there's nothing, no problem with adding that. It doesn't change. In fact, you can even put it in there and say, ignore the semantics of these things. And we like context. You can ignore it. What does it mean? So, yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a really good approach. And,
okay.
And we've done some translation. Actually, some of our vendors have done the vendors that are members of PESC have done some translation and provided JSON. And they're using JSON schema. They're using XML schema to make sure things like you're doing a proper implementation of arrays so that you don't have this case where if something's optional or unbounded, you know, it's zero to unbounded, that you always create an array even though it's not there and you create an empty array. So that it's easier for the programmers to deal with. So that's one of the decisions we are making is, yes, if we're going to do a translation, we're going to use the XML schema. We're not just going to do a simple translation. We have an XSLT that does that, and that's the biggest difference we saw was repeatable elements so that it became apparent that that's one of the problems that JSON programmer declared about, and in one case it's a property value pair, in another case it's an array, and that messes up their programming. They have to put an if statement in there and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we know how to do the translation, and we're working down that. We're going down each of the XML features and saying what's the issues with that, what's the issue with translating that, how would we do that? And looking at what other people are doing and how they're doing it. And I think that's a simpler problem than trying to figure out JSON LD right now.
Yeah. Can I ask, do you have extension points in your sort of current sort of schemas and standards? So places where customers, end users could say, oh, you know, we need to add some extra data or whatever for a particular thing. And do you offer that sort of functionality?
Yeah, we do offer that, some of our standards. User is called user-defined extension. There's only one. We define one type, and it's an any, so they can do any, put anything they want in there, in those tags, the user-defined extension. And we tie that to a lot of our elements, our complex elements.
Yeah, so you will find, actually, if you do move to JSON for these things, that sort of extension space stuff, sort of area becomes a lot easier for people when they're developing systems to, you know, try out their own extensions and things like that. And you've got a nice mechanism if they're working sort of with PESC to sort of look up sort of what extensions are becoming common in the market, and then it's relatively easy if you've got a JSON model to then start saying, okay, so these extensions that are being used here, we're now going to say, you know, these are going to become part of the model because there's a lot of uptake of them. And I think JSON itself gives people, gives companies, gives, you know, a lot of space for innovation in a relatively easy way, certainly a lot easier than if you're having to modify sort of XML schemas or anything like that. So, you know, that's one good reason for using JSON itself. But again, of course, if you were to, you can still do that with LD. It's just that you won't have the official things in your sort of LD context definitions. It'll just be some uncontrolled fields in the document. Yeah. So if you've got a very purist view of it, you're kind of like, well, you know, what's the point of it? But I think if you're going to just go at trying JSON out generally, that's a really good selling point for it.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else on the call have Steve or May have any questions? Anything you want to say about this conversation? Because I haven't heard from you.
I think it provides a great clarification for us as to which way to go. And as Michael Stessa mentioned, you know, a lot of this is dealing with hype. Or we have to go here and do this. Or like, well, why? Like, is it the right way to go? But I really appreciate Phil's input on what we should take a look at in making our decision.
May, you have any comments?
I don't have any question right now.
So I have a question, May. Do you have any linkages in your credentialing standard? I can't remember any. It's not like ePortfolio.
No, basically the credential is extended from existing standard. It's not much, no linkage at all.
Okay.
We define a framework, right? That's the idea of how we can link to the outside, the learning framework. We just put a reserved field, and it's open. It's open text field.
This is open. Okay.
Then, back then we didn't know how to extend it.
Okay. Good. Any other questions?
I didn't have any questions, Michael, but I thought the conversation was highly invaluable and really, really caring. And Phil, I appreciate your time. You know, we continue to meet on Mondays, but it's more of the same of this discussion to try to figure out, you know, what to do and when, and casting a wide net to make sure that we are hearing as much as we can. So we appreciate your time a lot. I hope you appreciate that we are very grateful.
No, absolutely. Glad if we can provide any help and insight from our perspective. And you know, it certainly sounds, speaking for myself, I think kind of what everybody's saying is right where we are at too, which is you having to assess this stuff against the hype cycle, which I think Jason LD is very much in right now, versus the degree of uptake and support and the role of the group or the organization or the company in terms of where you fall on the adoption cycle. And you know, certainly, like I said, on the Oracle side, we tend not to be out on the bleeding edge. And I definitely agree with all of the assessment that's going on here, that as a standards body, we probably want to be really careful about getting too far out ahead on that cycle, because you just don't know where it's going to go, and then you potentially end up sort of orphaned out there.
Okay, next week we will continue our discussion of XML features and how they what the issues are in translation to XML. So that list is in the meeting minutes from last week, and take a look at that. And the other thing we talked about was everybody just trying to become a little more familiar with JSON LD, so at least we have some idea what we're talking about when we have discussions on it. So I started reading the spec. The spec is actually fairly accessible. They put a lot of detailed examples in it, unlike a lot of W3C specifications. So it is somewhat accessible and readable. So it's a good source for the JSON-LD. There's also the JSON-LD site if you want to take a look at that. But I want to continue, and I think this makes sense from the conversation today, just going through and saying, What can make the JSON and the XML so that they're similar enough that people can say, yeah, that's the same information. So we'll continue that process starting next week. And Bill and Terry, you're welcome to join us. So if you want me to add your names to our invitation list, I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. Speaking for myself, I would like that very much. This is Kerry. I will actually be traveling for the next couple of weeks, so I won't be able to join. But I very much like to be able to join when I can going forward and contribute with anything I can.
Hey, Michael,
yeah,
you want to put him?
Yeah, same for me as well. Put me on the list. I don't think I'll be able to make every week, but put me on the list, please.
Cool. Yeah, and you know that's a good idea too, because we send out minutes and recordings. Not everybody can participate on every call, but we're very interactive between meetings, so thank you. I'll add you guys. And, Michael, with that, we're going to bring the meeting to close. We pretty much almost used the hour.
Yep, that was a very good meeting. Thank you.
Yes.
Oracle.
Yep, you bet.
All right.
Cool. Yep, thank you all around. Thank you.
All right, thanks all. Have a great holiday weekend for those of you on this side of the pond.
Yeah. No days off for the people in England. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Scotland or wherever.
All right. See you then. Bye for now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.